SiriusXM Sports presents
At the Races with Steve Bick.
Horse racing, handicapping,
interviews.
This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very good Wednesday, race fans. Glorious morning here in upstate New York. Hope it's as beautiful wherever you are. And as we reach midweek, start to gear toward the weekend. There's not a lot to gear up for. It's a very limited assortment the next several days. And we're going to then, you know, start to, as discussed yesterday, in fact, with Nick Zito, and start to add back some of your favorite racing ovals, including Churchill Downs and ideally Santa Anita. We're waiting for that official stamp of approval, the other elements. And on that front, of course, you know, industry-wide, plans being made, and we'll take them as they come and as they return. Sirius 219 XM 201 Sports on 964, and at our website too, stevebick.com. And yesterday, boy, the reaction. I suppose it bridged, I don't know, three generations, two and a half generations of Derby fans and horse players and industry observers yesterday with Carl Nafsker's visit and with Nick's. Nick's was a day late. Should have had Nick on Monday, but there was still, you know, there was a lot to do coming out of Oaklawn's, you know, final few days. And you know, when you think about, you know, at 1990, right, with Unbridled, and then, you know, 13 years later with Street Sense, you know, that's a couple of different generations. And, you know, then you fold in Nick in between with Strikey, and as he called him, of course, Strike the Gold was the year after, and there were a lot of ties between the two visits, Unbridled, and what Carl had to say. People just loved hearing from him, and Nick always is always a treat. And of course, you know, whenever you see this kind of, you know, you have this kind of visit, it and you look into and you watch videos, you go to YouTube, whatever, you look through charts, and it always triggers all kinds of other, you know, research or, you know, interests that you probably didn't know you had in some cases. And one of the things that came out, it's funny, one of the things that people reacted to was that discussion with Carl about the Secretariat, the race at Arlington, and the turf try, and how Carl, you know, said he was strictly using it as a conditioning advance to get ready for the Breeders' Cup, and you know, still almost wins, but does win the race for Mrs. Genter anyway with Super Abound. And I had two different people, including Dave Miller, the prominent bloodstock advisor and historian. I've known Dave for years, and Dave got a big kick out of that, out of Super Abound becoming a subplot to yesterday's conversation. And, you know, there's actually even more. And I, you know, with Sid today, this could be a real rabbit hole visit with Sid, Sirewatch Pedigree Focus, brought to you by Hill and Dale. And, you know, even a second level discussion, Super Abound by Super Biddy, and you know, Minnesota breeding, you know, and Tartan Farms. Maybe we'll let Sid riff on that a little bit. I gave Sid like six different topics to to consider today. But the principal one on this topic will be Unbridled's legacy, and you know, not just the racetrack legacy, but you know what his effect has been on the breed, because it's considerable. I mean, it's a mammoth impact, and it's not close to being, you know, I mean, it'll continue to be written. You know, via Arrogate, you know, which is a topic we've had, you know, a few times about Unbridled Song and his difficulty, actually, you know, getting an impactful son. I mean, a really impactful son, you know, as a stallion. So Arrogate is the next and, you know, the last seemingly to get that chance. And by the way, since that came up, since a little breeding topic came up, so thanks again to Carl and to Ian Wilkes and Nick for yesterday. I'll tell you what's coming up today, which will be fun. Something caught my eye looking ahead the rest of the week. There are the two-year-old races at Gulfstream Thursday and Friday getting started, and there are first-time starters for a number of stallions, four stallions, and only one is probably going to get a chance to start, because out of coincidence and the vagaries of the entry process, three of them ended up on the AE list. But Firing Line and Mishawish has entries, two-year-olds in the second tomorrow at Gulfstream. And then on Friday, Nyquist and Frosted. Frosted will be on the AE, but the Nyquist baby is going to get assuming everything goes properly, is going to get a chance to run. So I thought I'd bring that up with Sid today as well. The Firing Line, you know, who had, if I'm not mistaken, right, Firing Line got ready to go to stud and had an issue, right? Had a back problem and had to delay the start of his stallion career. But Elm Tree Farm bred a filly. It's a filly race on Thursday and the boys are on Friday. Firing Line's got this filly, Dancing in Fire, out of Thine, a pulpit mare, Elm Tree bred, and owned by Mark Warnick and CM Thoroughbreds, Carlos Munoz trains. And then there's Danny Hill, also Munoz. Nancy Shuford bred this one, the Mishawish filly, out of a Majestic Perfection mare, Maggie. And then on Friday, the Nyquist that will start, Wesley Ward. And Wesley's been settling for a couple too many seconds so far when it comes to the two-year-olds. But he's got Breakthrough, and maybe he will be the Breakthrough. This is a Nyquist out of a Storm Creek mare, Murky Waters, High Claire, and Springtown Show Stables. Bred this one, a $330,000 July yearling at Phasig. Ramon Talage and Constance Wick owns. And then the Frosted was an OBS March purchase, $420,000, Mike Rapoli and Vinny Viola, St. Elias and Rapoli. This is a Maribel, the Frosted Colt, Restored Order. And obviously Todd training, and I should mention, I got everybody in on the Wesley baby, but that Frosted doesn't seem likely to get in, is all the way outposted. This is a half, actually, to Derlu, the orb that Baffert had. So some two-year-olds, some two-year-old racing starting to filter in. Gulfstream is alone tomorrow, and then it's Gulfstream in Tampa through the weekend. And today, Fahner, Will Rogers, and Tampa. Tampa today, there's a couple of good allowance races. Fourth and the fifth, and then there's a maiden special. We'll talk about that with Seth Merrow later in the show. It's Hall of Fame Day. And just after 11, after the press release drops, Brian Bouye from the National Museum of Racing Hall of Fame, which is getting ready for this complete overhaul, facelift, modernization, interactive activity, and more and more, the hall will announce this year's honorees and inductees. 11 o'clock. So, on the agenda, and we'll talk probably tomorrow. Tomorrow's going to be a busy day because we got all kinds of things happening, including when we talk Hong Kong tomorrow, a very special guest. A special guest who you've heard before, who's one of the most irrepressible horse players in the game, on the contest scene and anywhere else. And you know him, you love him, you respect him, and he makes you laugh. He's as crazy as they come. Tommy Massis tomorrow, on the heels of Tommy taking down a seven-figure score over the weekend in Hong Kong. So he and Dick Powell tomorrow to talk about HKJC. So looking forward to that. Should be a lot of fun tomorrow. But we'll also talk, I imagine, to some of the inductees on the hall front. Speaking of Hall of Famers, a Hall of Famer is going to join us after the first break. And let me give you the Derby winners as we continue to feature the Kentucky Derby and the historic winners. The date of May 6th, not a bad one either. Yeah, yesterday was obviously pretty impressive, but Derby's on May 6th. Some very notable Triple Crown kickoffs, and affirmed, obviously, the one that you would gravitate to. But there's also any number of very famous sequences involved in here, including 1933, Broker's Tip, the famous fighting finish. Broker's Tip's only career victory. One of the craziest Derby winners ever. There were only three Derbies on the 6th before Broker's Tip in 33, and they go back to the 1800s, two of them, 1895, Halma, and then the next year, actually, they ran the Derby on the 6th 2 years in a row. Ben Brush certainly went on to a very influential stallion career. One of those obscurities, 1907, Pink Star. There's one I know absolutely nothing about. You know, most derbies you've heard something about them. This was a unremarkable six horse field that year. Pretty interesting. 15-1 actually. He was the longest shot on the board. Pink Star. Trained by W.H. Pfizer. Actually bred by Hal Woodford. That's a name I've seen. But a little bit of an obscure Derby. Kind of a lanky thing, too. big long neck. Funny look. A little bit of a. Got to find out a little bit of something about Pink Star. It's. It looks like it's kind of interesting. At two, yeah, he went 2 for 8 for small money, and then the Derby was his only win as a 3-year-old, and then he didn't run after that. He won the Derby, then was unplaced in the Latonia Derby, the Crescent City Derby, and the City Park Derby. I'm going to find out something about Pink Star. Other Derby winners, and the rest of them are names that are very familiar. Johnstown, 1-39. Pensive in 44. Carryback in 61. Proud Clarion, 67. Reaver Ridge, 72. Affirmed, of course, as mentioned, 78. Sunday Silence, kicking off a fabulous crowd sequence. Thunder Gulch in 95. If there's one moment in racing that, you know, really galvanized me to take the game seriously and become a horse player, it was Thunder Gulch's Derby win, which I enjoyed at Hippodrome Blue Bonnets. I think I was the only person who cashed. Foo Peg in 2000 and Barbaro 2006. I skipped over 1950. 70 years ago today, Middle Ground, Max Hirsch, his second or third of his Derby wins, and Bill Boland. He's going to join us after the break. Hall of Famer, youngest jock ever, and now the oldest Derby winning jock, Bill Boland, next.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Have you heard about the new handicapping and betting app that is sweeping the nation? It's called First Bet, and it puts the power of AI-assisted handicapping, seamless wagering, and live HD video in the palm of your hand. Thousands of bettors have already made First Bet their way to handicap, bet, and watch more than 300 of the world's top tracks. Isn't it time for you to join them? And when you give First Bet a try today, you can cash in on a huge welcome bonus. Sign up with promo code SPORTOFKINGS, all one word, and you will get $10 just for joining, as well as a 10% rebate, up to $500 for your first 30 days. With that much free cash on the line, what do you have to lose? Get started at first.com/bet. That's number1st.com/bet. And don't forget promo code SPORTOFKINGS when you sign up. And if you already have an ExpressBet account, you're way ahead of the game. Simply log into FirstBet using your username and password, and you're off to the races.
Up to 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with FirstBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal, void or prohibited. National Gaming Support Line 800-522-4700.
145 over 92.
180 over 111.
182 over 100. And I had a heart attack and a cardiac arrest. And then a stroke.
Your blood pressure numbers could change your life.
A lot of people don't understand, including myself, I didn't, now I do, the impact of having a stroke.
My memory is shot.
When I woke up, I couldn't speak.
If I would have followed a treatment plan, I would not be in this situation.
It's a tough journey.
Lowering your high blood pressure could save you from a heart attack or stroke. If you've stopped your treatment plan, restart it, or talk to your doctor about creating one that works better for you. Start taking the right steps at manageyourbp.org.
It's a new life, but I'm going to make it better. I'm coming back. Ask your doctor. Check your blood pressure.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
From BRL Equine, the people that bring you EPO Equine, Unlock, and Bleeder Shield, now comes Flexify HA, the most advanced scientifically based joint supplement on the market. To find out more, contact me, Joseph Vellante, at 215-501-6880. To be the best, give them only the best. BRL Equine.
Down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing. This is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Oh, well, come on, everybody, and let's get together tonight. I've got some money in my jeans, and I'm really gonna spend it right. Well, I've been doing my homework all the week long, and now the house is empty and my folks are gone. Woo, come on, everybody. Shaking from the bare feet, a slapping on the floor. Well, when you hear the music, you just can't sit still. If your brother won't rock, then your sister will. Woo, come on, everybody.
We're back at the races, about 20 into hour one. And just in communication with a few different people, Deja working on getting Bill. And in the meantime, while we wait, I did have the opportunity to talk to Andy Beyer. I don't know if you saw the piece in DRF, but Andy addressed Saturday and the not the difficulty necessarily, because there were a lot of races at the same distances. I mean, whether it was 9 furlongs, 8.5, and 6, and you know, there's no moving to the grass course. There's no, you know, hour and a half between races on the main track at Oaklawn. But it's still it was an interesting day in terms of the levels, the maidens, the allowances, the graded stakes, the older horses, the 3-year-olds, the fillies, the boys. There was a lot going on, and certainly between Andy and Randy Moss, who's done the figures at Oaklawn forever, they're, you know, they put their heads together and they came up with the numbers for the day. Andy, good morning.
Good morning, Steve.
I appreciate this, because it's funny. I was doing the exercise, I mean, literally minutes after the second division of the Arkansas Derby. People were asking, you know, who was faster in Nadal and the times, and we had so many pieces, Andy, of a puzzle when it comes to figure making that people can learn from, between, you know, comparisons of older to younger and so forth. And you wrote about it because you must have felt the same way.
Yeah, when the card was drawn, I saw that, you know, 3-mile-and-eighth races back to back to back. I thought, you know, unless they screw around with the track or there's a sudden rainstorm, we're really going to get a good line on these horses. And I thought it was great that you had a Grade 2 stakes race for older horses in the mix, because that's a real gauge of how good 3-year-olds are earlier in the year. I mean, if they can run as fast as, you know, stakes quality older horses, they're something special. And as it turned out, by my standards, won the Oaklawn Handicap race faster than Nadal and Charlotte. And Nadal was like a fifth of a second, faster than Charlotte. And our figures were 102 for By My Standards, 96 for Charlotte, and 98 for Nadal. But I thought it was very, very revealing. I mean, first, the fact that the 3-year-olds were close to By My Standards. You know, they're pretty good. Maybe not superstars, but, you know, certainly solid horses. But I had been hoping to, you know, just as a fan, hoping to see Charlotte and, run a race that would really certify him as a really you know, super top-level horse, at, you know, after winning his first two starts by, you know, with a 105 and a 106. And, you know, there was a question about him because of his pedigree. I mean, he was by a sprinter. His dam was, like, kind of at her best at a mile and a 16th. And I thought that even though he won by six lengths, for him to drop off 10 points in his figures at a mile and an eighth suggested that maybe Charlatan is perhaps basically a miler. I don't see him as a Kentucky Derby horse off of that performance, whereas I really like the race that Nadal ran. He was, you know, under pressure in a fast pace, and, you know, when King Guillermo, who had an excellent figure coming into the race, King Guillermo came at him, he just kind of kicked in another gear, and I thought finished very strongly. So I was impressed by him, and I downgraded Charlatan a bit after the, more than a little bit after the race.
And that made perfect sense. And it was also, you know, when you look at the beaten lengths adjustment chart, when you're doing comparative times, this was just textbook, Andy, in so many different ways. You know, starting with Nick Zito's maiden winner and recognizing that he probably was in the low 80s, and, you know, then, you know, seeing that he was about 13 lengths on the chart, slower than Charlatan, and then here's Nadal, who was a couple of ticks faster. It just all sort of fit. But the fillies and a mile and a 16th, and explain how you and Randy and Mark Hopkins and everybody, how you guys treat that distance when you're trying to make those comparisons.
Right. You know, I mean, comparing a mile and a 16th to a mile and an eighth is not that, you know, it's not that difficult. You know, it's 6.4, 6.5 seconds. So however whatever your speed chart says, the fact is that Gammon, the Bob Baffert filly in the second start of her career, ran a race that appeared to be like just as fast as Nadal, and we looked at this race and discussed it so long that we didn't enter the figure. Randy didn't enter the figures into the system until like about 3 or 4 o'clock the next day, because we wanted to get this right, and we were confused. And here's the confusion. I mean, okay, Gammon was a $1.8 million purchase. Looked great winning her debut at Santa Anita. Baffert loves her. She could be anything. So giving her a big figure is not a problem. But when we make our figures, we're not just looking at the winner. We're looking at all the horses who were contenders, and we like to see our figure for a race, you know, fit with, you know, most of the horses who were in contention. Well, this was a case where when you look at the horses behind Gammon and what they ran, and and my reaction was, you know, this can't be. Speech, who had won one race out of four, had run figures in her last three of 81, 77, and 86. And if Gammon gets a 98, then Speech gets a 97. She's improved hugely. Queen Bridget, who was third, her two prior dirt races were 73 and 73. Suddenly, she gets an 87. And fourth place, Kiss the Girl, had run 56 and 66 in her last two. She improves by 20 points off or last. So, you know, when I see something like this, and like everybody improves, it suggests to me that the track probably changed. That I just don't, you know, it's just too coincidental when you see like the, you know, like four horses all running the race of their life at the same time. And so this was the subject of of keen discussions between Mark and Randy and me. And you know, it's Randy's track. He's been doing Oaklawn Figures since he was a teenager. I'm going to defer to him, but we have, you know, something about, we have some different philosophical positions, and you know, in the buyer speed making speed figure team. I mean, Randy is Randy really believes that, you know, you look at the data and accept it, period. He doesn't like to project races and to take a position, as in this Gammon race, and say, this is impossible, I'm going to lower the figure. We call him Scalia because he's like a strict constructionist. You know, the founding fathers said this in 1787. We're not pushing from that position. Whereas Mark and I are a little more liberal, you know, and there have been some high profile cases where we've had races like this where I was adamant that the huge figure was not possible. And I think that in modern day racing, track superintendents have become a lot more hands on in the way they kind of can manipulate their tracks. And if a track superintendent, you know, like sees the first few races on a card and the times are really slow, I mean, he can send the water truck out an extra time around the track, you know, and change right. The track surface. So if, you know, when you see a race come up super fast, it could, you know, it really could be an aberration. If you remember a couple years ago, the personal ensign at Saratoga, I mean, Abel Tasman and Elate ran this unbelievable race. I mean, it would have been like the best filly mare figure in years, and they were noses apart. And like, if we gave them the figure 113 that the data suggested, like everybody in the race would have just run a lifetime best by far. And I refused to accept that figure, and so did Mark, and we lowered it arbitrarily, and we were right. Nobody ever ran back to that number. So that's kind of the context of the Gammon race. And as I said, this is Randy's baby. I was going to defer to him. He called the track superintendent and said, was there any change in the watering here, the track during the day? The guy said no. He timed the race. The 141.91 was on the button. He texted Bob Baffert and said, how good is Gammon? And Baffert just texted back, superstar. So Randy felt that there wasn't, you know, that there wasn't enough evidence to throw this, you know, to just disregard the fact that Gammon had ran so fast. And so she gets a figure of 98. I have to say, I'm was prepared about his judgment, but I'm not convinced. When speech and Queen Bridget run again, I'm really going to be most interested because I just don't believe that they were likely to have run so big at Oakland, but. That's why this is what makes speed figures interesting. I mean, it's so interesting to me because it's not just a mechanical process of, you know, you calculate your track variant, you put it in, there's the numbers. I mean, you get thrown curveballs every day, and we have to make our best judgment.
Well, and you know, there was at least another horse in that filly race that ain't no Elmers, who had run a big number in the maiden win. I don't know. She was 2 for 2. It was the allowance win at Fairgrounds, going 6. But you know, here she was having to stretch out and. She really. I talked to Brett Calhoun on Monday, of course, because of the by my standards performance. He took a step forward too, but you did have another horse in there that
right
that had
you
run
can make,
80s
Steve,
buyers.
You can make that case, but my experience is that you want to look at horses who finished the race in some kind of contention. I mean, if you look at horses, if you say I'm going to make my figure off a horse who got beat 20 or 30 lengths, you're always going to come up with a giant figure. Ain't No Elmers was 20 lengths behind the winner in the
right.
race, and I'm just not going to, it's dangerous to base your judgments on a performance like that.
Well, and especially because she was doing something different. The proverbial, the question you ask yourself, when a horse is a Harvey Packism, when it comes to horses doing something different for the first time, in this case, stretching out. Regarding the two boys, and I think the uniform reaction to Charlatan is, this is really an exciting horse and the type that guts a field the way he did, but that, long-term, one-turn mile type seems right. The question is, Andy, what do you now think transpires between now and summer, and whenever there's going to be the next set of Derby preps, as it were, and that's going to be things like potentially the Iowa Derby, the Indiana Derby, the Haskell, who knows, the Travers. This is such a strange situation, but horses, 3-year-olds, improve and change at interesting rates, and September is not May.
Yes, I mean just as we would not draw too many definitive conclusions about a Kentucky Derby in May based on form in January, we certainly, it's a little premature to try to predict what's going to happen with the Kentucky Derby in September. I mean, we don't know what the racing schedule is going to be. What does Saratoga do with the Travers? That becomes kind of an irrelevant race if you run it, at the end of August. I mean, they would want to have a race about a month before the Derby. Would you just make the Jim Dandy your feature race, or would you make the Travers a mile and an eighth in this one exceptional year and, you know, run that as a million-dollar prep for the Kentucky Derby? I don't know. I mean, there are a lot of possibilities.
Very frequently, we get to the Triple Crown season, and we look at the buyer pars for the Triple Crown events, and how much faster, quote unquote, do you expect a September mile and a quarter winner to be than, you know, do we look at the Travers as a model for that?
I would think so. Although, you know, by the time of the Travers, horses, the top 3-year-olds who have run in the Derby and in the Triple Crown series have really been revved up, and so now they're fully fit. They're ready to, deliver big races in the Travers, and we've seen some monster figures in the Travers. I wonder this year, though, with most trainers thinking, well, our real objective is the first Saturday in September, if they're going to take give their horses a relatively light preparation and not given that kind of hard racing. But I would nevertheless expect this Derby, just, you know, with the horse's greater maturity and so on, is going to be significantly faster, at least a half a dozen points on the figures, maybe more than Derbies in recent years have been.
Interesting. Well, we're just, dealing with the circumstances as they morph and as they come. What's been getting your attention? Are you betting the bull ring at Fonner? And
I just did before you called. I was just finishing up my Fonner trip notes. I love the fact that some of these crazy, or I wouldn't say crazy, these little tracks are getting their one moment in the sun. I mean, I cut my teeth on bull ring tracks and cheap claimers, Charlestown for many years was a track that I paid a lot of attention to. So I like the style of racing at Fonner, and but you can't waste your effort on tracks like that when there's no money in the pools. But when they've got a $2 million pot in the pick five, it's certainly worth doing a little handicapping, and I'm kind of enjoying it.
It's really fun, and it's amazing to me how quickly, if you follow a circuit you've never seen, even something like a place like Fonner, which there's so few bullring opportunities anymore. And I've had this discussion a couple of Fridays ago with Paul Matisse, and Paul also loves the old fair circuit that you've written about, lovingly about the fair circuit, right? Those half mile tracks, and I think people have really adjusted to it, and right away you start to tell what jocks have a feel for when to move and on the type of horse that the class levels are very distinct, and there's a lot to like about what we're seeing. I mean, I don't know if people will be.
One of the great things about modern racing is that is the information we have. I mean, and I do all my handicapping on DRF Formulator, and you know you you know you uh, you dive into a new track, and you can quickly do research on the trainers, click on the horse's last race and watch the videos, so it there's not like a huge learning curve, and when you're dealing with a bull ring, you kind of know what to expect in terms of the style of racing. You want speed. you want to save ground, it's doable, and it'll certainly give us a little entertainment for the month of May.
Yeah, well, they're going to continue, and they actually, you mentioned the pick five force outs. There is going to be one. There's going to be two more. There's one next Wednesday, the 13th, and then 2 weeks later, closing day with the extended, 4 weeks. The 13th and 27th will be the two force outs, and Andy. So you can target those, and of course
we'll put those dates on our calendar because there's certainly a lot of room on my social calendar. I mean, these days, how about you?
To one degree, doing the show, the only thing different, obviously, is that I'm not, at the venues. This typically, March into April, May, through Belmont, I'm on the road, almost the whole time. And so from that standpoint, I'm missing the road trips. But just in terms of topic and discussions and digging into things, we've been featuring yesterday, we had Carl Nafsker because it was the anniversary of both Unbridled and Street Sense, and he was terrific for an hour. Nick Zito, we're supposed to have Bill Boland. We're having trouble now getting back in touch with him. I talked to him this morning. It's the 70th anniversary of Middle Ground's win. It's Hall of Fame Day. People, it's funny, Andy, you ask me that because people have said, how are you filling time? It's no different than any other time, really. I mean, there's so much to discuss around the game, and the fact that we're getting so much exposure, and you've got all these new signups on the ADW front, and people are looking at the game. I mean, how about the TV coverage on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday?
Yep.
it's amazing.
What's your sense since you talk to a lot of people in racing. Have a lot of people just shifted their bankrolls to these lesser tracks and are playing them? It's just stunning how much money is being bet, and I wonder, if it's really a broad-based thing, or if it's just if a lot of it is just the syndicates looking for some place to put their money.
I think there was the continuity of Oaklawn, people that that were A circuit players that might have been playing Aqueduct at the time, and mm-hmm. then Churchill and Santa Anita. I think they, particularly the West Coast players, shifted their action to Oaklawn, and I think a lot of them had already been doing that, given how difficult it was to find betting propositions at Santa Anita the past calendar year with all the difficulties and the inconsistencies. But I think Tampa and Gulfstream going on into after Florida Derby and Tampa Bay Derby, that's been, there's some continuity there, and so those players continued. And then the rest, I've bet Fonner more than Will Rogers Downs, but players going to play. I mean, they're going to find some things. I mean, obviously the overall handle is going to be way down. You can't replace, you can't replace the volume. But at the same time, Andy, there's definitely going to be a key learning out of this, which I think we all knew that less was going to be more in the grand scheme of things. But I think there's a lot to be said about spreading the action out on the calendar in 7 days and not having you know, 11 circuits running over the same 8 hours, you know, on on certain days.
Absolutely. You know, you know, the, you know, the, we certainly have learned from Fonda that, you know, gamblers aren't going into a hole and hibernating on Mondays, Tuesdays, and Wednesdays. I mean, if the, you know, if the, you know, if the action is there, you know, they're going to play. And, you're right. I mean, when, particularly now and for the coming months, when, you know, when racetracks are presumably going to be running in front of empty grandstands, some smart ones should just, you know, I mean, what does Saturday mean? You know, you know, it's no different from any other day, and they, you know, they should be, as you say, spreading out their cards to every day of the week.
Well, had a very revealing and I thought insightful comment from Andrew Offerman at Canterbury. We talked to Andrew the other day, and he said that one of the considerations that they're making for the start of their season is to shift to some quiet days, and there's even been the newest racetrack, I suppose, on a lot of people's menu, Presque Isle, they also took sort of an alternate approach by carving out that 5:30 start time,
right,
and trying to find a place where other circuits were winding down their day, and any of the night ovals hadn't really started. And Presque Isle, I know some people probably aren't interested because of the synthetic surface, but there's a lot to like about their racing. It's like a greyhound park. I mean, horses run every 10 days. It's,
right.
It's unbelievable how often they start and run. And it's very formful. It's very approachable racing, and it's at a time in the day where there's not a lot of other circuits running.
Right.
5:30 to 8 o'clock. They've carved out a niche for themselves. They've applied, by the way, on that topic. The Pennsylvania horse racing interests have applied to Governor Wolf's office to allow them to begin, and so that is on the governor's desk, and they're ready to throw their switches at least at Penn and at Presque. I have not heard what Parks's position is, but
have your ear to the ground. What's gonna happen in California?
They're seemingly ready to go next Friday, the 15th, and the Board of Supervisors last week voted 5-0 to recommend or to, to say, give their approval. And now, again, the Los Angeles County Health Department, which has seen fit to allow the Arboretum across the street to be open, but apparently golf courses, too. But yet they've been holding Santa Anita, off with a whip and a chair. However, everybody we talked to, management and the horsemen organizations, TOC, et cetera, they say that they believe everything is in place for the approvals, and it should come in the next day or so.
Well, let's hope so. And
yeah.
And what's your prediction for New York?
Much more difficult and much more uncertain. And I must say, I brought this up. It's funny you ask. I brought this up yesterday and had further conversations after the show yesterday. And after having some confidence and some speculation that, perhaps around the 22nd they could get going, right now there has been no indication from Albany as to when they can start. And the horsemen are getting a little unnerved. They had received smoke signals from the racing office and from Martin Panza that things looked promising for the, you know, the third week in May. And now I don't think the message is as enthusiastic. And so the horsemen are getting, they've sheltered in place, very amicably for 6+ weeks, and they're getting antsy, and I don't blame them. The infections have stopped, and they've done everything. All the procedures are in place. And by the way, I will mention, sending out best wishes to Bruce Levine, was very sick with COVID and has recovered.
Oh, really?
But yeah, Bruce was sick, but he's made it out the other side. So best wishes to Bruce. I wanted to slip that in this morning.
And what happens at Saratoga?
That continues to be the multi-million dollar question. They want to run here, and the concern is basically shifting tack and bringing this. Obviously, they wouldn't bring the same staff if you're going to race without without patrons. You don't need the entire Naira. Management. Management is one thing, but you don't need all the marketing team and all that. There's apparently, Andy, some resistance from local authorities they seem to be giving off a signal that if we're not going to benefit from it, then please don't come, which is utterly bizarre, because nothing in Saratoga would even exist if it wasn't for the New York Racing Association. It would still be the dog-eared town it was in the 70s, and it's astounding that there would be any kind of negative impression emanating from Saratoga about coming up without without patrons. It's very strange, actually.
It's really a tough call.
It's a mess on that front, and we just hope it works. You're a perfect person to ask. I'm unconvinced that the racing has to take place physically at Saratoga. Martin was quoted as saying that, the handle and, the volume would not be the same if it was the Saratoga condition book run at Belmont. And
everything the world knows about marketing would say that the Saratoga brand is so special. If there's nobody in the grandstand, do you think that, is that going to impact the millions and millions of dollars that people, bet from home or bet from simulcast parlors on Saratoga? I don't think so. But, if it's Belmont, it just doesn't have the same cachet.
Hmm. Yeah. Well, this is the message that has kind of emanated from, you might have seen Martin Panz's quotes last week. And, it set off kind of an interesting discussion. Certain devotees are going to bet, obviously, no matter what. And if you got nice full fields and intriguing betting propositions, a certain amount of play is going to gravitate that way. But I guess I can understand one aspect, Andy, and that is certainly the configuration at Belmont doesn't necessarily. It would be different. When you're talking about one turn, mile and a sixteenths and mile and an eighth. It's a different oval, and to some degree, it the racing isn't. You could call it Saratoga at Belmont, but it really isn't the same. I don't know. You did this. You were a fledgling player, right? When Belmont and Aqueduct were being remodeled in the mid 60s, and there was the, they were running, you know, they were running meets at you know, the respective tracks while the other was being renovated.
But you know, Saratoga nowadays is such a special case. You know, you could call it Saratoga at Belmont, but it's still going to be thought of as Belmont, and it's just not going to. I don't think it's going to grab the public. I guess the people at Saratoga could. It's tough because with all the barns and the barn personnel you're going to get an influx into the town. I just don't know how it would play out.
Well, that's a whole different topic too. Obviously a lot of backstretch personnel has, housing on track, but how readily are horsemen going to, be able to get into the houses that they've rented historically? I mean, I'm sure a certain percentage will be available, and I've already heard, I've already heard some interesting propositions. You know, there's certain landlords that are, they're offering bets on the come. You know, if you send me $2,500 now, you could have it for the whole summer. And then, of course, if they don't come, they keep the $2,500. So some people are. You want to talk about some future wagers? I don't know. And so that topic is being broached. And there is the possibility, it's still what? We got all of May, we got June, so we still have got 1, 2, 3, call it 7. You still have 9 weeks. And you got to figure, I don't know, that things are going to be, it's a moving target, that things will be significantly different, by the beginning of July and into early July. And if we use Hong Kong as a model, Hong Kong had no patrons for a certain period. And then actually they had limited, limited licensee availability. Then nobody was allowed. Then they went back to licensees are able to come now again to Sha Tin and to Happy Valley. And, they're slowly letting in, some more people. So who's to say that licensees don't get an opportunity to come to Saratoga at some point during the summer? And we don't know about the restaurants opening and that sort of thing beyond takeout. So there's a lot, how are things in D.C. and in the Capital District?
Shut down. I mean, yep. Fortunately, I'm married to a woman who's a tremendous cook. There's kind of no activity here. Restaurants are closed, barbers, manicures, right. Everything else. It's Washington is a law-abiding place. People. People here, there's a mentality around people who work for the government. They're, they kind of do what they're, what they're expected to do. You don't see people flouting social distancing and so on. It's been pretty quiet. I mean, thank God for fodder.
and you can still bike, right? You've been out. You've been biking.
Yes, we. They've there's a parkway that runs right through the heart of Washington. They've barred to traffic, and so I can get in every nice day.
I can get out
on my bike. Help to keep my sanity.
Andy, this was wonderful, and we covered a lot of ground, and I greatly appreciate it as always.
I've looked at my social calendar for the next couple of months. There's absolutely nothing on it. So call me anytime.
It's a deal. We absolutely will. Andy Beyer, everybody, and Beyer Associates, a little bit on the figure-making methods. Always interesting, and it's just great to, you know, to be able to have Andy at any time. Let's take a break, a little past the top of the hour. Going to try to reach Bill Boland and get Bill lined up for after the visit from Sid Fernando. Sire Watch Pedigree Focus brought to you by Hillendale next. And we got Brian Bouye coming up as well, the release of the inductees for the Hall of Fame. Less than an hour away now, 11 o'clock. We'll find out who is added to the rolls. Across the street from Saratoga Racecourse, the National Museum of Racing Hall of Fame. Back after this with Sid.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
If you are racing two-year-olds in California, Kentucky, please consider Bleeder Shield, the leading all-natural paste used to greatly reduce or eliminate EIPH. The list of trainers who trust Bleeder Shield is endless. Shouldn't you join the team? To learn more, contact Joseph Vellante at 215-501-6880.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Here in Pennsylvania, we have the best breeding program in the country, thanks in part to our Racehorse Development Trust Fund. It's a trust, it's not tax dollars, and by law, our fund is completely protected. These are difficult days for all of us. When life in America gets back to normal, and it will, our PA breeding program will be here, stronger and better than ever. To learn more about how we're protecting the trust, go to PABred.com to watch a short video.
How's it going, Sue?
Hey!
Have you seen this commercial?
What career track are you on?
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck.
Isn't that the horse racing school that Bob Baffert went to?
Yeah, Todd Fletcher, too, and lots of other major players in every area of the industry.
Really? Like what?
Well, for starters, we have graduates who are executives at Churchill Downs, NYRA, Darley America, Gulfstream, Keeneland, you name it. They're also regulators, racing officials, bloodstock agents, track announcers. My class had a job placement rate of almost 90%.
Wow, what other college program has results like that?
What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing, this is At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Feeling like a boss and staring at the stars. It doesn't matter the cost, cause everybody wants to be famous and call the shots. So, see you over a bar. It doesn't matter the cost.
We're back at the races. I did not expect to have Andy for 45 minutes, but it, you know, you just, it's a conversation. You're listening in. It's like talking to Andy on the phone any other time. So that was great, and I appreciate Andy and having the invitation basically to call him. I think we can start calling Andy on Fridays and having him handicap some Saturday action. Time to turn, though, to Sid Fernando, Sire Watch, Pedigree Focus, brought to you by Hillendale. And I probably could go another hour and 45 minutes with Sid, because there were so many topics that kind of were generated over the last, you know, 3, 4, 5 days, including the Arkansas Derby winners of Baffert's, Nadal and Charlatan. Then there was the topics that came up yesterday, including Unbridled, and our visit with Carl Nafsker, where we talked about his career and hinted about his influence on the stud book. So lots to talk about with